You know, it's these wonderful nights that I get to come in and fill in for Rick Smith and spend a little time with Brett Benatelli that I feel really, really happy about life. One reason now that we're in our new studios is because I realize, because I can't see Brett and he can't see me, and because of my just characteristics and personality type, that if I wait an extra 15 seconds to start talking, he's like really afraid that I've gone to sleep in the front lobby or something. He's not even sure I'm in here because he can't see me. This is really a wild setup. We have two studios, one for the anchor and one for the producer. And I've worked in stations with studios like that before, but we always had a window. It was a little window that we could, like, look, well, wave, you know, make hand gestures of varying type. But it's total sight blindness around here in the studio right now. So Brett just has to go on blind faith that I showed up and sat in the chair and was ready to talk at the time that he cues me up. So thank you for being there, Brett. I appreciate you. I think you're wonderful. Rick's got the night off. I just saw him as on my way in earlier this evening, and he was hanging out with his daughter and her friend after basketball practice. So it's nice that he gets to spend some real time with the kids. When you work every single night, as so many Americans do, as so many Americans know, especially people working retail and slugging along, there's just so much of your kids' lives that you miss. There was a friend of mine who was having a little crisis on Facebook, and I don't know, I realize, and you probably do too, I couldn't live without Facebook. It's my gateway to humanity. But she was upset because she had to miss her daughter's ball practice after, I guess her daughter's a cheerleader, cheerleading practice or the first game or whatever, because it was after school. And, you know, son of a gun, this woman works. And she works not evening hours like Rick does or like I do, but she works daytime hours, and she had to be at work. And that's what happens to working people. They miss their kids' stuff. Anyway, she was sort of lamenting on Facebook that she felt bad that she had missed her daughter's first game, cheerleading. And somebody said, you know, you need to pick your priorities better. And I think this person needs to pick their insensitivity better. They need to be insensitive on a wall that I can't see, because that way I don't have to firebomb them, you know, verbally firebomb them anyway. But it's tough. And so Rick, like so many other people, works evenings and misses a lot of what the kids do. And so it's really fun for me to come in and fill in for him and let him go do those good parenting things that I was, for the most part, lucky enough to do when my kids were younger. I worked in the media, so if I had to do parent-teacher conferences during the day, I usually had to take a vacation day. But other than that, I had my evenings free. Anyway, great loss this week, enormous loss. Loss to humanity, loss to, I guess the universe gained a beautiful soul. Which means we need beautiful souls on the planet Earth to start flexing their muscle and doing the right thing and speaking out, because we lost the great voice of Nelson Mandela this week. And I just thought I'd say five of the things that he had to say about the United States of America, this courageous voice. It's interesting because a whole pile of presidents are going to go to his funeral service. And I would expect Jimmy Carter. I would expect Bill Clinton. And, of course, I would expect President Barack Obama to go. George W. Bush, not so much. Wouldn't expect him to be going. I guess he is going, but wait till you hear the stuff Nelson Mandela had to say about him. Anyway, he was a vociferous critic of the Iraq War, spoke out greatly against it. In fact, he condemned George Bush for undermining the United Nations, and he said, this is a Mandela quote, "It is a tragedy what is happening, what Bush is doing. But Bush is now undermining the United Nations. If there is a country that has committed unspeakable atrocities in the world, it is the United States of America. They don't care for human beings. Who are they now to pretend that they are the policemen of the world, the ones that should decide for the people of Iraq what should be done with their government and their leadership?" Nelson Mandela on the war in Iraq. Speaking out again against the war in 2003, Mandela denounced President Bush personally. "What I am condemning is that one power with a president who has no foresight, who cannot think properly, is now wanting to plunge the world into a Holocaust. Why is the United States behaving so arrogantly? All he wants is Iraqi oil." Nelson Mandela. Not that I'm going to criticize Nelson Mandela, but I also think the military-industrial complex wanted to flex its bank account. He also denounced the United States as a serious threat to world peace. Initially, it's believed that Nelson Mandela supported the war in Afghanistan. He then criticized the United States for its actions. The United States has made serious mistakes in the conduct of foreign affairs, which have had unfortunate repercussions long after the decisions were taken. If you look at those matters, you will come to the conclusion that the attitude of the United States is a threat to world peace. I don't know how anyone can think of the United States' actions as anything else. He also called out the United States for its hypocritical stance on Israel in an interview with Newsweek in 2002. Neither Bush nor Tony Blair has provided any evidence that such weapons exist in Iraq. This was prior to the war. But what we know is that Israel has weapons of mass destruction. Nobody talks about that. Why should there be one standard for one country, especially because it is black, and another for another country that is white? Nelson Mandela, famously imprisoned. He also condemned Israel and its supporters for the treatment of the Palestinian people. Israel should withdraw from all the areas which it won from the Arabs in 1967. And in particular, Israel should withdraw completely from the Golan Heights, from South Lebanon, and from the Western Bank, Mandela said. And then he also refused to toe the U.S. line on Cuba. Again, this is Nelson Mandela. From its earliest days, the Cuban Revolution has also been a source of inspiration to all freedom-loving people. We admire the sacrifices of the Cuban people in maintaining their independence. sovereignty in the football. Excuse me. Senator Rand Paul has started reaching out to African American voters, and he's at.
Gonna be at a football party. What are you talking about?
He traveled. This is a story in today's Washington Post. Traveled to Detroit today to visit an African American voter outreach center opened by the state.
Oh.
Opened by the state's Republican Party to address the Detroit Economic Club. He will also be going further later this spring to Howard University.
Ooh, okay. He coming here.
Yeah.
All right, maybe he'll stay at my place.
This is not the first time, according to the Washington Post, this is not the first time national Republicans have tried to make up ground among black voters. Back in the 2000s, it happened. So, you know, they're counting it on decades. So is this what this particular columnist goes on to say? The GOP should just give up trying to sell a bill of goods to people who they don't care if they're young men and women have jobs. They don't care if they have homes. They don't care, you know, if they have an equal fair shake.
Yeah.
Can that be said just about the Republican Party, or is that basically the power elite that doesn't care?
Well, you know, money don't care about nothing but money. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what I say overall with that. And in terms of the overtures to the black community, you know, everybody knows now you can't win an election on the white vote anymore in America. America's not that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that brown vote, that Latino vote, that black vote, that immigrant vote, that Middle Eastern vote. You know, and then there's a lot of, and because black culture is so powerful in American society now, entertainment-wise, a lot of white folks vote a black way, if you will, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, and the Democrats and the Republicans, they're strategists, they know that stuff. And so they plotting and scheming to make themselves look good, you know, in not even in the black grassroots community, but, you know, on the surface to black people in general. Because a lot of black people are Republicans. A lot of black folks have, you know, Republican viewpoints on the economy. You know, I mean, there's some things that I'm conservative on that would be considered Republican, my viewpoints on how to, you know, in the nuts and bolts of how to, you know, work the economy and things like that. So it's not a, you know, there's a connection that could be made there, and so they're going for it.
Because it certainly is racist to assume that a color of people votes a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. I know plenty of black Republicans, sister. Trust me.
And
plenty of them.
So what's the future of? I mean, Nelson Mandela died a couple of days ago. You know, every white leader. Slowly, some slower than others, like Dick Cheney and Ronald Reagan, but slowly over the course of decades, had it dawn on them that this guy who was sticking up for the African race in Africa
right. How about that?
To get the right to vote was not a terrorist. You know, It took centuries overall, but decades just for this man, almost three decades just for this man to get out of prison.
Yeah.
And now the flocking to his memorial services in South Africa will be.
Yeah, they glad he did. Oh, my God, Mandela finally. They said, oh, my God, he's finally gone. Jesus Christ. Thank goodness. And they can put him up on the wall next to Martin Luther King now. And John F. Kennedy now, put Mandela face up there now and co-opt his image and move on and get to the business of taking over the world.
Yeah. He did speak out a lot.
They're gonna co-opt that brother. They never talk about, just like with Dr. King, they never talk about why he did what he did. You know, Dr. King did what he did because black people were being persecuted and menaced. Nobody wants to say black. Nobody wants to say that he was fighting against white supremacy. That's what Mandela was doing, but they're not. They don't talk about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
They like to talk about how he was forgiving. That's what they want us to do. Be very forgiving and you know, let it go, and all the quotes that are coming out, all these wonderful angelic quotes that Mandela, you know, like Mandela didn't cuss. I want to see the clip where he was pissed off. Pardon my language. I want to see the clip where he was upset. You know, I'm sure like he was never upset. Like Mandela sat on a rock in the cold, holding a lotus flower, and was, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do with Mandela now. So it's a We Are the World moment.
You know, George W. Bush is going to his memorial service. And
that should not be allowed to happen.
That should not be. Thank you. Thank you. That is exactly the way I feel. I think that is the most disrespectful thing anyone could do to Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because he fought him. He spoke out against him. He did everything he could to wake up the nation of the United States and the world that's victimized by it. He tried to get everybody to understand that George W. Bush was a cancer on this world.
That's right. And Bush kept him on the terrorist classification list, right? During his whole entire presidency.
Yeah.
So why would he go see Mandela? That's how powerful Mandela was. They shouldn't let him go see the Mandela.
I know. I do not believe they should allow it either. I think it's completely disrespectful. Nelson Mandela would be. And I don't believe Dick Cheney's going. But, you know, Dick Cheney voted against him, the resolution to ask to have him released from prison.
Exactly. You know. And, it's a testament to the forgiving heart of the world's oldest people on the planet. And I'm going to say this. Mm-hmm. You know, all life stems out of Africa. Civilization begins in Africa. That's the birthplace of civilization. The birthplace of everything loving and kind and just in humanity comes out of Africa before it left the continent. And that's a testament. Look how we do. We allow people who have persecuted us, hunted us down, think that's nothing, and still allow them to come home. Africa is home for George Bush. And we let that kid come home. After he went through a tantrum or not.
Yeah.
That's how the Americas were conquered. You know, the natives were kind to the settlers that came. The Africans were kind to the Europeans that came to the continent. You know, only to be deceived and have knives driven into their backs. And then even after centuries of dealing with that, we still are kind and forgiving. And I hope that, you know, that's a lesson I would want the world to see.
Yeah. I got one last thing about Nelson Mandela. He never fell for the garbage about George Bush caring about AIDS. Because all that money they threw at AIDS, they wouldn't allow condoms. People that were fighting AIDS, if you were pro birth control, condoms, and reproductive freedom, you didn't get any help in Africa fighting AIDS. And, you know, that's the George Bush legacy, complete manipulation. And Nelson Mandela never bent a knee to that. And I just love him for that probably as much as anything. And in honor of the oldest civilization and how important it is, it's really important for me to wish your daughter a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. She's in the car. She says thank you. She's snoring. Snoring really bad in the car right now. So we're good. We're nice and cozy. The heat's going well. So. Yeah.
Well, Head Rock, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time, and thank you for reminding us all of where we really came from and that we can get to a much better place altogether.
Oh, thank you, Pat, so much. I love you. Thank you.
I love you, too. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith. And we'll be back.
The Rick Smith Show. This holiday season, try buying a gift that can really make a difference in someone else's life. Buy your friend, family member, or coworker a goat and help fight hunger in South Sudan. To do so, visit goatsfortheoldgoat.com. There you can buy a goat and also shop for beautiful merchandise made by actual women from South Sudan. One click of a button this holiday season could mean the difference between nourishment and hunger for people who often go days without eating. Goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Again, that's goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
The bluebirds of happiness are chirping away in our nation's treetops. For America is now in the fifth year of economic recovery, with stock prices at record highs, corporate profits soaring, and employment is even ticking upwards. But wait, what's this? Down below the treetops, down at the grassroots, poverty persists and is spreading. Also, income disparity is worsening as middle-class workers are pushed into lower-wage jobs and poor people are pushed out entirely. Far from happiness, joblessness among our lowest-income families is now the worst on record, topping 21%. The plight of the poor is so dramatic that even Republican leaders in the U.S. House have noticed them and are reaching out with open hands. Unfortunately, not to lift them up, but to slap them in the face. In a gratuitous act of callousness, the GOP slashed $4 billion a year out of the food stamp program, complaining that even though our economy is recovering, more and more people are getting food assistance. Apparently, these Congress critters never even visit reality. Hello, boneheads. The program has expanded only because all of the recovery benefits went to those at the top, leaving those at ground level reaching desperately for food stamps as a life preserver. In fact, the program lifted about 4 million Americans above the poverty level last year and kept millions more from sinking deeper into destitution. It's a safety net that's been working exactly in the way it's supposed to. This is Jim Hightower saying, yep, just for the hell of it, these laissez-faireland Dickensians added insult to the injury their cuts would cause for millions of America's hard-hit people. They tacked on a provision to let the meanest of states force the needy families to submit to humiliating drug tests as the price of obtaining food for their families. And House members wonder why their approval rating is in the ditch?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And this is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith. He's got the night off. It says Friday night off with the kids, which is a wonderful thing. But I've got Victoria Jones, who's going to tell us what's going on all over the planet, and especially here in the United States, from Talk Radio News Service. Thanks for joining me, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Good news on the job front. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, good news on the job front. What economists were predicting was about 180,000 to 185,000 jobs would be created in November, and they were wrong. And 203,000 jobs were created in November, and that's considered pretty good, actually, particularly since September and October were revised upward by 8,000 jobs also. And the average job growth for the past 3 months is 193,000, with not much volatility in the numbers. And so they think that these figures are suggesting that job growth is picking up speed, the market's picking up speed, and that things, you know, this is good.
What does this mean when you look at all the criticism they've had of Obama over all these, of President Obama over all these years? I mean, his computer science isn't working on the healthcare plan. It doesn't appear, even with the, 100,000 or so additional people added this month, that the healthcare plan's hurting the economy, or at least not job growth.
Well, I don't think that's so. I don't think one thing necessarily has anything to do with the other thing.
So all that doom and gloom about how if we put in this healthcare plan, it would crash the economy.
I think that the, first of all, health costs have been slowing down. So mm-hmm. that's one piece of it. Second of all, I think that if the healthcare plan was going to crash the economy, it wasn't going to happen yet. That was going to take more time.
I see. Okay, and then are these jobs all minimum wage jobs? Are these jobs that you should expect to have showing up just prior to the holidays, or is this bona fide job growth?
This is a combination. I mean, some of these jobs will be minimum wage jobs, and some of these jobs will not be minimum wage jobs. So it's going to be a mixture of jobs that we're seeing being created in a mixture of sectors. So that's why they're pleased about this. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. So generally speaking, they're quite pleased. Now the not so good news, although it sounds initially like good news, is that the unemployment rate ticked down by 0.3 percentage points, down to 7%, which is actually the lowest level for 3 years. So that is good news, but it went down probably partly because people were leaving the labor force.
Ah, then they stopped being counted. Although overall, I mean, has there been a month in the last even 2 years that hasn't had some kind of job growth?
No, the job growth has been pretty solid.
That's what I was thinking. Now, the world is grieving the loss of Nelson Mandela. Is there word yet on his memorial service? Do we know what the plans are? And, you know, who from the United States will be attending that?
Well, it's all starting to come together. So it's still all in the very early stages of what we're hearing. So what we're hearing is all still very much subject to change. We do know that President Obama and Michelle Obama are going for the memorial. Former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton are going also for memorial events. We're hearing that former President George W. Bush and Laura Bush will also be going.
That's interesting, considering Nelson Mandela was not the least bit shy about his criticism of that president.
No, that's right. That's right. But you've got to remember also that George W. Bush worked extremely hard on the AIDS issue, which is also an issue that Nelson Mandela is very strong on. He's had a son who's died of AIDS.
So this is
something that they're close on.
Is this going to be a national event in South Africa? I mean, will this be a national day of mourning or something like that? I mean, how are they going to handle it there?
It's going to be huge. I mean, this is going to be, I think, a week of mourning. There will be a memorial service on the 10th, and in this enormous stadium that seats nearly 100,000. And then he will be buried on December the 15th in this tiny village of Kumu. And that's going to be logistically extremely complicated to put on, because just getting to that village is going to be very, very complicated. So whether the various presidents who go, and I don't know about Jimmy Carter, I don't know whether he's going, I've not heard anything about him yet, whether the various presidents who go will go to this large event on the 10th, or whether they'll go to maybe other memorial things that are going on next week, this is all just being put together at this point. But they go, they definitely will. Not as far as we know to the funeral.
It really is. I mean, I'm just the exact age. I protested apartheid in the 80s. When my mom died, we found pictures she had clipped out of the Boston newspapers of me at these protests, and I didn't know she knew I went.
Oh, you know? Really?
Yeah. I had no idea that my picture was in the paper, and then the pictures of me had these little circles around my head, you know, and the she picked me out of the crowd.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole time is just, to me, it's so important. And do you know if the Pope's going to go?
Don't know if the Pope's going to go. I've heard nothing about that at all. So I couldn't even begin to guess about that. That's very interesting. No idea. No idea about that at all.
This new Pope seems to be cut of similar cloth, so it's kind of interesting.
He's a fascinating guy.
Yeah. So Jim Sensenbrenner has got some opinions about whether or not James Clapper should be fired or prosecuted, or, I mean, what is all this lying to Congress business? Isn't that just sort of status quo?
Well, you see, this is a reference to when DNI James Clapper was testifying earlier this year, and Senator Ron Wyden was asking him about whether the NSA were tracking American cell phones. And which Ron Wyden already knew, being on the Senate Intelligence Committee, that they were. So he couldn't say that because it's classified, so he asked him the question.
Uh.
So he's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
And so Flapper answers basically in a very weaselly way, and then weasels his way out of it, and basically lies, and then weasels his way out of it by saying that he'd answered by giving the least untruthful answer that he could give. And Jim Sensenbrenner, who is the original author of the Patriot Act, mm-hmm. and is a pretty conservative Republican, who is now the author of a bill, which has a companion bill in the Senate, to really crack down on the NSA, I mean really crack down on the NSA, is saying, no, lying to Congress is a federal offense, he should be fired, and he should be prosecuted. He lied.
This is really amazing. This is it's almost impossible to describe this in some sort of a metaphor. He created the monster of spying, and now he's trying to eliminate the monster of spying, and so anyone who's lying to cover up spying is now in trouble with him. Is that right? Is that
and he's saying what we created with the Patriot Act, this is not what we created. This was what the law that we created was not this. They have subverted the law and twisted the law completely. He said, this is not the law that I wrote. He's been very frank about it. This is not the law that I wrote. And that's why he's got this new law to try and rein it in. But he's having to go head-to-head with Dianne Feinstein on the Intelligence Committee, and some of the hawks, and Mike Rogers in the House on the House Intelligence Committee, who want to keep the NSA pretty much as it is.
Hmm. Well, maybe they'll just all eat each other.
Pretty much.
That would create a vacuum. It might be fun to fill with, I don't know, nice people. And now, finally, Democrats in the Senate are planning to advance 6 key nominations. Is this because they eliminated the ability to filibuster into eternity any nominations?
Yes, that's exactly right. Huh. What happened is that because they have now eliminated the filibuster, except for Supreme Court nominees, basically, I mean, there's a couple of other things, the Senate Democrats have said, right, guys, we've got a week, pretty much. Let's get some work done. And so they want to advance Janet Yellen to run the Fed, mm-hmm. Jay Johnson to run the Department of Homeland Security, and they want to get Mel Watt in at the Federal Housing Agency. And they've got these 3 judges who they want to get in place at the D.C. Court of Appeals. And they, of course, are the ones who were being blocked and were the reason that eventually Harry Reid lost it and decided that they were going to get rid of the filibuster in the first place. And so they are going to bring these guys up and women up next Monday, probably. And the Republicans are going to foam at the mouth.
And no one will be able to tell because they've been doing it for so long. The foam's pretty permanent. Well, do you have wonderful weekend plans, I hope?
Yeah, except we're having a storm on Sunday, so I'm not too sure about that.
Well, we've got one right now. So if that's the one headed your way, it's
cold
and rainy.
We're getting your storm.
Well, we're really sorry that we have to send it your way, but we don't want to keep it.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, thank you so much. We'll be right back with more of The Rick Smith Show coming right up.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We can survive on 735!
15 and a union!
We can survive on 735!
15 and a union! Using one-day strikes and protests in over 100 U.S. cities coast to coast, fast food workers and their supporters demanded at least $15 an hour and the right to form unions without retaliation on Thursday. In Madison, Wisconsin, state lawmakers joined clergy, other fast food workers, and community supporters as they entered a Taco Bell to support two workers as they walked off their jobs.
Come on out! We got you back! Come on out! We got you back! Come on out! Yeah!
As she walked off her job, Quanta Smith said she was against striking at first, in part because she feared being fired.
I was really scared I was going to get fired, but hey, if it helps the cause, I asked my boss, told my boss, listen, you know, I'm going to do it, so, yeah.
I have little kids, so I guess it's something, you know, for me to earn more.
If anybody can help, listen to this, help us.
Sean Lane joined Quanta in walking off his Taco Bell job in Madison.
We're walking out today. The protest is in regards to the low wages paid by multi-billion-dollar corporations. For them to say that they can't afford to pay us a little bit more is asinine and selfish.
Lane says employer retaliation for striking is possible, but illegal, and he urged fellow fast food workers to join the strike movement.
Don't be afraid. Fight for what you believe to be right. Fight for what you deserve. Fast food is hard work. The lowest economic denominator in this country works incredibly hard, and we deserve more. We're worth more.
In the frigid cold, as workers carried signs and chanted, Wisconsin State Representative Melissa Sargent said taxpayers are footing the bill for big corporations paying poverty fast food wages.
The cost of public assistance to these families, of these workers in the fast food industry, is over $7 billion a year. McDonald's taxpayers $1.2 billion. Here in Wisconsin, the cost of the low-wage workers is $166 million. This is not okay.
Rabbi Rene Bauer, director of South Central Wisconsin's Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice, says economic inequality with extreme wealth at the top and poverty wages for millions is immoral.
I'm personally involved because I think that the wealth disparity in this country is the great moral crisis of our time. CEOs are making near $14 million a year while workers are having to rely on public assistance and working at least one or two jobs is why I'm out here. This is one way we can change that. The economy's not going to grow with the wealth all in the top tier.
The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers.
From the Fight for 15 fast food workers picket line in Madison, Wisconsin, Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Claustrophobia, hypochondria, xenophobia, rolled up into one.
Welcome to the Rick Smith Show. This is Pat Lamar, filling in for Rick, who's probably home canoodling with the little lady. Kids must be asleep by now. Oh, my goodness. Rick Santorum decided to say something about Nelson Mandela. Some days, being on talk radio just can't get any better. During his appearance on Fox News Thursday night, former Senator Rick Santorum, Republican from Pennsylvania, discuss the death of Nelson Mandela. Ready for this? Ready to hear the pearls of wisdom that fell from a man whose name is synonymous with nasty? He said, when speaking of the death of Nelson Mandela, that the former South African president fought great injustice, just like the Republicans who right now are battling Obamacare. Makes you hope there's a God, doesn't it? Maybe old Nelson Mandela can get a hold of a lightning bolt. Nelson Mandela stood up against a great injustice and was willing to pay a huge price for it. Like 27 years of his freedom, you total idiot. That's the reason he's mourned today, because of the struggle he performed. That's what Santorum told our friend Bill O'Reilly. But you're right. I mean, when he was advocating for what was not necessarily the right answer, but he was fighting against some great injustice, and I would make the argument that we have a great injustice going on right now in this country with an ever-increasing size of government that is taking over and controlling people's lives, and Obamacare is at the front and center of that. You know what the hardest thing is about quoting Rick Santorum? You have to be Sarah Palin to understand it. You can't even figure out what that's... But you're right. I mean, when he was advocating for something was not necessarily the right answer. So you're saying that the Republicans are advocating for something that's not necessarily the right answer? Or you're just afraid to say that Nelson Mandela actually advocated for something that was the right answer, like, oh, letting black people vote? The statement pointed out by Slate's Dave Weigel in a tweet on Friday morning came after Fox News host Bill O'Reilly claimed Mandela was a great man, but he was a communist. Ay, 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 ay. Then O'Reilly said, I would never attack Nelson Mandela. I agree, because being called a communist is not an attack, unless, oh, you're Bill O'Reilly and you are trying to attack someone. Why are these people even allowed to talk? I think that there should be, I mean, I'm a big fan of the First Amendment, obviously, because I exercise mine as often as I can. And, oh, by the way, talk radio is not First Amendment. Talk radio is paid for speech. First Amendment is you take your lipstick and you write something on a cardboard and you stand up on a street corner and you hold it up and you have the same odds of getting any attention as anybody else. But, oh, dear Lord, they should just... This is paid speech, these talk radio hacks, and they should be told to shut up about someone as great as Nelson Mandela. Speaking of delusional, McDonald's says that the actions that are taking place outside its restaurants right now are not technically strikes. Yes, the actions taking place outside McDonald's and other fast food restaurants all across this country are just disagreements on terms that stem from McDonald's rather old-fashioned idea of how work should be. McDonald's released a statement on its website Thursday in response to demonstrations taking place in cities nationwide seeking higher wages for fast food employees. This is the statement on McDonald's website. We also respect the right to voice an opinion. To right-size the headlines, however, rather than supersize, that was cute, McDonald's. To right-size the headlines, however, the events taking place are not strikes. Outside groups are traveling to McDonald's and other outlets to stage rallies. Our restaurants remain open today and every day, thanks to our dedicated employees serving our customers. The post note that belongs there is, whether or not they have homes or food or access to health care themselves. Lord knows we don't pay them well enough to have those things. The definition of what constitutes a strike has been migrating for the past several years, according to Nelson Lichtenstein, a labor historian at the University of California, Santa Barbara. As labor groups work to organize professions typically resistant to unionization, and the reason it's resistant is they actually tried to unionize at McDonald's, and the McDonald's closed and built a new store across the street where the labor union people had never been in it before. In one example, Walmart urged reporters to ask groups organizing protests on Black Friday how many of the people involved were actually workers. The classic definition of a strike would then be workers withhold their labor and production is shut down in some fashion. Recently, for a variety of reasons, this is according to Lichtenstein, having to do with the nature of the workplace, the strike migrates just to a sort of demonstration on a picket line being made by other outsiders. And I would like to say, if you're one of those outsiders who has been picketing Walmart or McDonald's or any other power retailer or fast food organization, these huge multinational corporations that are nailing your brothers and sisters, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for spending your time doing it. Thank you for sticking up for other people. Thank you for sticking up for a decent wage. Thank you for sticking up for decent hours and predictable. I mean, these poor folks, they can't even get a predictable schedule so that they can get a second job. It's manipulative and it's cruel and it's big, huge corporate business way of keeping the serfs serfs. And then they have people like Paula Page in Maine who want to add 12-year-olds so that you've got a 12-year-old making your cheeseburger or a 12-year-old cashing you out at Walmart and do away with child labor laws that unions fought tooth and nail to get for us, we the people. It's just absolutely amazing. And then this is possibly the best story, I think, of the week, but Lord knows, things could change. Right-wing evangelicals now claim that good Christians can't get post-traumatic stress disorder. Two of America's most influential televangelists claim that good Christians cannot get PTSD. This is an alternate story. Kenneth Copeland, who was famous for pitching a fit when a senator tried to investigate his nonprofits and for inspiring a measles outbreak, said, "Any of you suffering from PTSD right now, you listen to me. You get rid of that right now. Don't take drugs to get rid of it. It doesn't take psychology. It takes the Bible. The Bible will get rid of it." Copeland's guest, conservative revisionist historian David Barton, agreed, adding, "We used to, in the pulpit, understand the difference between a just war and an unjust war. And there's a biblical difference. And when you go to do it in God's way, not only are you guiltless for having done what you've done, but you are esteemed." Does this sound like Sharia law to anybody else? Does this sound like, you know, if you've got God on your side of your war? Even Abraham Lincoln said in his second inaugural address, there's no way God's on both sides here. How about God's on nobody's side? Barton believes that anyone who behaves biblically during war can't get post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, we make fun of people for talking like this. I don't mean me. I mean, obviously, I'm making fun of him. But our culture makes fun of other cultures that have a different religion because they believe things like this. Unfortunately, there is a logical flip side to the statement. Someone who has post-traumatic stress disorder must have not been biblical in his actions, and thus he is ultimately responsible for his or her own PTSD. Understandably, a lot of people are upset. Not me. I'm not upset. I'm enjoying the heck out of the fact that these people are stupid. Socially conservative gospel coalition members and America's largest Protestant denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention, made their distaste known, calling their comments profoundly stupid and callow and dolt-ish. So if all of the evangelicals start fighting over whether or not war gives PTSD if it's not God-justified, then is this a war that may or may not be God-justified for PTSD? See, it opens up a whole new can of worms. At any rate, 48% of self-identified evangelicals believe that prayer alone, 48%, that's half, effectively, margin of error, making it half completely, 48% of self-identified evangelicals believe prayer alone can heal schizophrenia, major depression, bipolar disorder, and other mental illnesses. Prayer alone. I know one thing. I have a feeling that prayer alone can cause them. that may or may not be true. Anyway, I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick tonight. Tune in coming up in the next couple of days. You'll hear Rick again. Have a nice evening.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the Buddha's sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous.